afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I want to thank you for joining us today. You are listening to Financial Survival, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, November 6th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, there are tons of things to talk about today. So let's get started with the market report today. Let me close out my Skype here. We had gold today. Gold had a turnaround, and I think it was really based on a lot of the information coming out of Saudi Arabia of today. And but gold today had a reversal of $11.10 today. $11.10 at $1,281. Silver was up big, 41 cents, up 2.5% at $17.32. Platinum was up 15, probably the best showing that we've seen in platinum for a while, $939. And palladium was down a dollar at 102. The USDX at 1,002.
Yeah.
The USDX today had pressure 0.15 at 94.76. Crude up. See what you made me do? You've interrupted my flow.
That's why we have a producer. If anything goes wrong, you blame the producer, Melody. It's one of the rules. I thought you understood that.
Except on this program. You know I always blame you. Crude oil today up big, 175 at 57.39. So a big day for crude oil. Paper markets today. Let's see where my paper markets are. Okay. Where'd they go? See, it's all your fault now. The Dow
is your computer is valuable as an antique, Melody. You should take it on the antique roadshow. Show them I've got a computer from 2012 that's, oh my God.
Al and I were talking about my computer prior to the program, and Alan, I just can't get rid of things if they're still usable. You just don't replace it to replace it. So I have enough computers in the storage room that I've already replaced, and I'm not going to add another two or three to the pile of junk that's in the computer junk drawer. But anyway, the Dow was up 9 points today at 23,548. The NASDAQ was up 22 points, 6,786. And the S&P was up 3 at 2,591. 10-year yield, not a lot of pop there, 2.32% down, 0.02. Euro, it's only 116, and was down 0.04. So gold really was the trade of the day, and the precious metals had a good day after it gets hammered daily. So someone said to me today, Melanie, how long can they keep controlling the prices of gold and silver? We got too much to talk about to we'll address that later. But folks, eventually reality overtakes. You know, that black swan comes and reality comes into play. And once reality plays, you know, there's no going back. So gold will have its day. Silver will have its day. And take advantage of these lower prices. And when gold is $5,000 and silver is $200, you're going to say to yourself, man, I sure wish gold was $1,300 and silver was $17, because it's not going to be a fun world that we live in when those numbers are that high. And I believe those numbers are right around the corner. So let's get started right away. We want to talk about the Saudis, but Al, I think everyone is still affected by the shooting in Texas yesterday, the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. And where a man opened fire, 26 people were killed and wounding another 20.
Yep.
And
Reports indicate this guy is a hardcore, or he was, a hardcore atheist. Some of his friends said they couldn't deal with him anymore because he was absolutely contemptuous of the Christian faith, of religion in general, and he was aggressive about it. He was constantly trying to convert people to be atheists, and this apparently plays into why he shot up this local church. All right, he had an axe to grind. He didn't like religion. He didn't like Christians. He thought we were all stupid, and he expressed his contempt with a firearm, killing 26 people.
I also believe, well, you know, again, you hear various reports while this was all unfolding, but I believe he did have some connection to his wife, his mother-in-law or ex-mother-in-law attended the church. And
did
so
she?
there was a little personal history also to this particular church.
Well, he had been jailed apparently by the Air Force when he was a former Air Force enlisted man, and he'd been jailed, convicted for assaulting his spouse and child, and he had been jailed for something like 12 months and then dishonorably discharged. So it may be that he's got some, who knows, if he was allegedly assaulting his spouse and his child, who knows, the mother-in-law may have played a role in that. It may be that maybe he thought his wife was going to be there. I have no idea. I mean, but this thing was, the big story is not, contrary to what a lot of people believe, the big story is not that this guy killed 26 people and wounded 20 more. The big story, here's a headline from the New York Post that begins to outline this. The big story is that an armed neighbor, this is the headline, New York Post, an armed neighbor hailed his hero for disrupting Texas church massacre. A concerned neighbor who heard the Texas church massacre unfolding on Sunday went and grabbed his rifle and tried to stop it, opening fire on the shooter and chasing him down in a stranger's truck. The man, who's not been publicly named, is being hailed online as a hero after state officials described his actions during a press conference. Summer Cattle, young woman, told KSAT that her boyfriend, Johnny Langendorf, watched the gunfight unfold between Kelly, he is the man who did the shooting, and the rifle-wielding resident.
They have released those names.
Well, they may have by now. I don't know. But the names are not the important point. Whoever they were, the fact is, you know, what the problem we have for people who want to support the Second Amendment is that every time there's a shooting like this, everybody knows exactly how many people got shot, how many people died. We can count the wounds. We can count the bodies. It the mathematics is inescapable. We have an exact number. How many people died? 26. Okay, that's more than 25 or 20 or whatever. This is a big deal. All right, but nobody knows how many lives were saved by firearms. In this particular case, we have a man who sees this. He sees, hears that some crazy guy is shooting up a church, and he grabs his rifle. He lives across the street or next door or whatever. He grabs his rifle and starts shooting at the killer. All right? And in doing so, he got this guy to run, make a run for it. And then another guy in the local community, he saw what was going on. All right. He saw that somebody crossed the street or wherever with a rifle was shooting at the killer, and the killer makes a break for it in his vehicle, car or truck, I don't know which, but he makes a break for it, and he's making a high speed exit, and this third guy shows up, and the guy with the rifle says, "We got to get this guy." All right. These two people, they're both members of that little community. But they don't know each other. They're not buddies. They're not pals. They're not neighbors where they do barbecue together and the rest of that sort of thing. Never really met before. And the guy in the truck says, "Let's go." And the two of them chase this guy down. And when they finally get to him, he pulls off the road and he crashes into something. I don't know, a tree, a telephone pole, whatever. He has some sort of a wreck, minor wreck. And he's inside. The body is there. And he has been shot in the head. And maybe he's been shot by the guy with the rifle. And maybe he's taken his own life. But he, according to reports, also had a significant number of firearms in his vehicle. Now, nobody knows how many people he intended to shoot. If this guy hadn't shot him, they said that in the report, they said the cops got there about 5 to 7 minutes after this thing happened. That's pretty good time for the cops. But how many more people might he have shot in 5 to 7 minutes if no one had been shooting at him? And what I'm trying to get to on this is we know, we always get a number. Oh, my God, 26 people were shot. We got to get rid of rifles and semi-automatic rifles. How many lives are saved by one man who had a rifle and started shooting back at the killer? We don't have a number on how many lives were saved. We don't have an exact number. We can't know. We don't know where this guy, we don't know how many more people at the church he would have shot and killed if someone hadn't started shooting at him. We don't know how many people, if he drove down the road, he was going to pull into what, McDonald's or a restaurant or something and shoot that up. We don't know what he would have done, but he had a bunch more guns and he was apparently prepared, no telling what he was going to do. We don't have an exact count. My point is, just because we don't have an exact count of how many lives were saved by firearms doesn't mean that none are saved. Because they don't stack up. They don't show up in our, you know, we don't find a dead body. Every life, who can say who was saved, who wasn't? How far would this guy have gone? The point is, this is powerful evidence. This story is powerful evidence that we want that Second Amendment. We want the right to keep and bear arms, because there will always be lunatics who pull these kinds of stunts, and they will get weapons. I don't care what kind of law you pass. You can't keep drugs out of this country. I guarantee you're not going to keep guns out of this country. Criminals will always have weapons, and the only way to stop them is you also have to have weapons. So, to me, this is an extraordinary story. I mean, this guy made no telling how many lives were saved by one man with a rifle. One man with a rifle. All right? He could have saved 20, 30 lives. No telling how many people he might have saved. We'll never know. But it's a powerful evidence that you want that Second Amendment. You want the right to keep and bear arms. Because there's crazy people who are going to get guns, and when they do, your only defense against them is to have your own. So,
agreed. And you know, I told you prior to the program, the term hero is so loosely used anymore. But these guys were heroes.
Yep.
They put their lives on the line to save other people. And we should find their names. I saw them earlier today, but I didn't write them down.
One of them, the guy with the rifle, was not named in the news reports I've seen. One other guy, the man driving the truck, was named. Langendorf is the last name of the man who was driving the trucks. He just says, you can listen to this and you can hear Texas. He says, I pulled up to the intersection where the shooting happened and I saw two men exchanging gunfire, the other being a citizen of the community. He recognized the guy with the rifle. He knew he was local. He didn't know him, but he knew he was part of the community. He said the shooter of the church had taken off, fled in his vehicle, and the other gentleman came and he said, we need to pursue him. That he just shot up the church, so that's what I did. I just acted. This is Texas, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not talking about Dallas or Houston or Austin. This is rural Texas. This is something real, and this is the sort of thing you can explain. This cannot surprise people who understand what Texas is all about. Two guys, pickup truck and a rifle, and they're chasing down a bad guy. And I think you're going to see more stories like this before this is done. People are going to pull a gun in Texas, and they're going to find themselves people chasing them down the road. Oh. In any case, I'm pleased and I'm proud to hear what these guys did. So in case we're doing about 95, he says we're doing 95, chasing stuff, going around traffic and everything. Eventually, he came to a kind of slowdown, and after that, we got within just a few feet of him, and he got off the road. He just lost control, and that's whenever he put his vehicle... I put the vehicle in park. The other gentleman jumped out and had his rifle drawn on him, and he didn't move after that. According to Langendorf, took the cops 5 to 7 minutes to arrive at the scene. The neighbor kept his gun on Kelly the entire time. The police arrived, and they pushed us back and took care of the rest. The cowboy hat-wearing citizen told KSET that he only had one thing on his mind as he was chasing Kelly with the armed neighbor, try and get him. It was strictly acting on what the right thing to do was. This is really an extraordinary story. and a cowboy hat wearing. This is the kind of guy that the leftists like to make fun of. These are the gun-toting conservative rednecks and the rest of that sort of thing. That's who it was. And they saved some lives. And I'm, you know, applause, applause. So, what else, Melody?
Well, there was other things going on also on Saturday. You had the Antifa, the demonstration supposedly around this country. There must have been a good college football game on or something on Saturday because not too many, I don't believe too many showed up.
Nobody showed up.
Yeah.
Basically, no one showed up. There's something from InfoWars, a little article they had on it. It's, the headline is Antifa Revolution Ultimate Fail. November 4th, anti-Trump demonstrations a total dud. Antifa Revolution Ultimate Fail. The much anticipated November 4th, Antifa protests were such an epic failure despite being propped up with Soros money. This is interesting because insofar as the demonstrations were organized under the banner of being anti-Trump, and they didn't attract anybody. There's something like 20 cities, if I understand correctly, mm-hmm. where they had claimed they were going to have demonstrations, and none of them showed up. Mm-hmm. Does this indicate there is a change in public sentiment toward Trump? Mm-hmm. One possibility. Second possibility, and maybe the flip side of the same coin, what about changing public sentiment toward the left-wing activists? Left wing's had a lot of press for most of the last year, and they've gotten away with a lot of thuggery and violence. And this is evidence nobody showed up. They gave a demonstration and nobody came. Is this evidence that people are perhaps a public sentiment is saying, wait a second, we've had enough of this leftist thuggery. We're not going to show up for it. I'm not saying that's what happened, but it could be. And it could be that this is evidence that there's a change in public sentiment toward Trump. We'll watch and see. I won't tell you. It's, you know, I'm just speculating.
I just think the frenzy is gone from the election. I mean, they had this frenzy. The left had this frenzy being built, and I think it peaked. And I mean, these people, they don't even know what they were showing up for. Oh, this is, you know, this is going to be this and that. And no, and they didn't even know what they were. So they don't have melody. They don't have a heart. They didn't know what they were there for to begin with. So how can you continue to, you know, to support and to demonstrate something that you believe in when they didn't know what they were going for in the first place?
Well, you know, this was propped up with Soros money. There have to be people who are sincere liberals, sincere leftists, and the rest of it who have to be offended that Soros is paying demonstrators to show up. All right, and the reports have been fairly numerous over the last year. Soros is meddling. People are being used and manipulated. A lot of people are probably, even though they are sincere leftists, they may be upset with that, and they may just say, they may
all
be
you
saying,
have to do
forget
is,
that. I'm going
I mean,
home.
People are just totally disgusted by what comes out of the mouth of some of these people. So maybe it's just, you know what, we're not going to give you the attention and the time that you think that you deserve because you're just disgusting human beings. And again, they don't know what they're standing up for. So
they're fine. They're standing up for taking a break for commercial announcements, Melody. And we will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Yes, Al. $550, we're going to continue. It popped up a little bit. I couldn't keep it at those lower prices because such are the big increases today with gold and silver. So you're looking at gold and 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, 21-ounce American Silver Eagles, includes your shipping costs, $550. You can buy one or 100 of these packages. It is a great little package. It includes all your shipping costs, $550. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs. They are archived, and you can listen live also. And we are redesigning the website. I sure hope it's done in the next 2 to 3 weeks, because then I will make announcements as far as the changes. We'll be talking about Twitter. We'll be talking about Facebook, all those things that I dislike. But, hey, you guys, people love it, so I'm going to have to learn to love it, too. But we'll be doing Twitter. We'll be blogging. We're going to promote the radio program.
Will your computer do Twitter, Melody? I think Twitter was invented since you got that computer. I'm not sure. Will your computer do Twitter?
All right, Al. I think it can do Twitter.
Okay.
You know,
you can't teach an old computer new tricks.
We're going to tighten up that nut in the computer so it does get completed. So, and if it doesn't, then I will break down and get a new computer. But it's got everything on there. It's Melody friendly. You know, so I know how to. It's not user friendly, it's Melody friendly. So until it bucks me every now and then. But there's been a lot of other interesting news. And, you know, is this the black swan that's coming our way? Something that is interesting. And how does it all play into things? Saudi Arabia is cleaning house. I mean, they had a stunning purge. This weekend, the anti-corruption purge took the business community by complete surprise. There were arrests on Saturday. High-profile businessmen, government officials on suspicion of corruption was unprecedented. But the intended message was loud and clear, and it's in a new era for the kingdom. Nobody, a prince, a minister, a businessman, can operate outside the law, said an aide close to the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is leading attempts to transform Saudi's economy. People should now realize there's a red line when it comes to corruption. The young Crown Prince wants to end what he once called an addiction to oil. Sweeping changes have already been introduced, including subsidy cuts, new taxes, and the lifting of a controversial ban on women driving. Now, is that an addiction to oil or addiction to the dollar, or a combination of the two, or totally separate? And how are these people who usually get all their subsidies, they get paid by the oil, now they have taxes that they're going to have to pay? You know, I don't think you're going to see some backlash, I would think. I mean, they've arrested at least 38 former, current, or deputy ministers on accusations of corruption. Of course, the list also includes Prince Alawid bin Tala, the billionaire businessman, and he owns 95% of Kingdom Holding, which has a global network of major investments, including Citigroup, Twitter, Apple. And his shares have fallen over the past couple of days, just 12%, but it wiped out more than $1 billion off his fortune. I'm not quite sure how many of those billions that he has, but he lost one of them in just 2 days on 12% on his shares. And then it moves to something that happened also on Saturday in Yemen. The Saudis are blaming Iran for a missile attack. Yemeni rebels' missile was intercepted near Riyadh, was made in Iran, so the Saudis say. And, of course, Iran denies involvement. But they're claiming that it should be considered an Iranian act of war, Saudi Arabia said in a statement that is going to intensify their tensions. They intercepted the ballistic missile. The Saudi-led military coalition that has been at war with the Houthis in Yemen for more than 2.5 years considers this a blatant act of military aggression by the Iranian regime and could rise to be considered an act of war against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So, with our agreement now of the petrodollar, where we're supposed to help protect the kingdom, are we going to be drawn into a possible conflict with Iran?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we're going to be drawn into a conflict with Iran unless they can engineer the appearance that Iran attacked Saudi Arabia.
Well,
if Iran attacks Saudi Arabia, I'd say yes. If Saudi Arabia is going to attack Iran, I wouldn't be so sure. I wouldn't, you know, if we'll support them, we'll defend them if they're attacked, but I don't know that we will give them absolute support if they attack. And besides which, how long would a war between Saudi Arabia and Iran last?
It depends. If Iran has nuclear weapons.
What I mean, a half hour.
Well, yeah, but you don't understand what comes after that, though. So, just like North Korea, it's like, oh, yeah, he's a little blip on the planet Earth. What happens after that? I mean, you're looking at World War III, a nuclear war. And so this is just another area that, because we're there, it doesn't matter. We're there to protect the Saudis. You know, Mr. Trump.
Well, we have been there to protect the Saudis. That's been the deal.
It's been the deal.
But the Saudis have begun to go into trade agreements and the purchase of military weapons from Russia. All right? And this is the sort of thing that's evidence that they are preparing to start selling their crude oil for Russian rubles. Right? Maybe Chinese yen or yuan. And insofar as they do that, that is going to be a serious blow against the petrodollar, whatever remains of the petrodollar, and it would mean that the dollar would lose value. It wouldn't necessarily mean it was going to be destroyed, or at least not immediately. But the Saudis are in the middle; they're trying to change horses in midstream, and it's hard to say who's protecting who right now. I'm not even sure. Do we have the resources? Can we get into another conflict in the Middle East? Do we have the resources for that? With Iran, with Syria.
As long as we keep it off budget and nobody knows about it, sure. That's what they do with all wars, right? Keep it off budget.
Yeah.
You know, but they print, and you know, there's. In which the alternative would be, we would somehow get involved. I mean, we know the relationship with this administration and Iran. I mean, these are all the same players, and none of them are getting along. I mean,
my question is, are we still interested in being there to defend Saudi Arabia if they're cutting deals with Russia and China? And they're going to, and it certainly appears that if they're not doing it already under cloak of darkness, if they're not already selling their crude oil for yuan and or rubles, it looks like they're gonna.
Seems
almost certain that they're going to do that, and probably within the next 12 months, and maybe before that. You know, they might be doing it already. You can see the trend. You can see the tide moving. Pulling Saudi Arabia away from the United States, Are we going to stand up and say, oh, we'll still defend you? Or will Russia step in and say, oh, we'll defend? Well, I don't know. Russia's caught because they get along with Iran. I don't know where Russia's going to come down on this. Where's China going to come down? I don't know. But it's becoming complicated, and it's apparent that Saudi Arabia is going to change its political position to some degree. And not just in terms of its relationship to Iran and Russia and the United States, but also in relationship to the 38 who were arrested for corruption.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
incredible.
In a sense, we're not just...
That's,
I know.
That's
this is
amazing.
Like a purge. This is like a purge in the former Soviet Union. They have been arrested for corruption. They've arrested a billionaire for corruption.
And that's
I didn't think you could arrest a man who had $1 billion.
Well, it's going to be interesting what they do with them. And,
well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but this appears, this new
this is dangerous.
Head of Saudi Arabia.
The way I view it, it's very, it's very dangerous. And I think what we're really experiencing is we're really, because you have all these, I mean, I don't know, for lack of a better word, tribes. They're all, you know, and it's like they're all trying to cut their piece of the pie. I think for the first time we are seeing a global clash of societies to some, you know, because
well,
they're all
the
out there.
Here.
They're
this
all
means-
I don't think we've ever been this global before.
No. No, I'm sure that's true. But what we may be seeing in Saudi Arabia is to some degree, the new head of Saudi Arabia is cleaning house. Whose house is he cleaning? We could say the elite. Is this the equivalent of the deep state in the United States? How similar is this to the process, to what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now? For some people trying to impeach Trump, other people trying to get Hillary and Podesta and who knows who else, and the left and the Democrats arrested and jailed. I mean, there is a kind of there's a level of instability that's not confined to Saudi Arabia. It's here too, and I wonder how many other places it's at. And maybe you could talk about Venezuela in the same. You know, they don't seem to be connected, and yet there is at least an interesting coincidence going on here, where we see serious political problems taking place in a number of different, you know, another number of different countries.
Natives are restless.
Yeah, the natives are restless.
But I mean, to me, this is probably the, you know, very fascinating information, and you know, they're looking to. I think I heard Trump say that he was asking the Saudis to the oil company Aramco to trade on one of the U.S. exchanges, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's, you know, they're looking to value this at $2 trillion.
Well, this is another another indication that not
huge.
Everybody is buying stock market records.
Yeah.
It's evidence we talked about in the past, the Baltic Dry Index, which was over 12,000 at one point. Now it's down under 1,000 last I looked. That is an index that measures how much global trade is taking place, how much is being hauled by ship from one country to another. And it is down to something like 8 or 9% of what it was several years ago. That's evidence the world really is in a recession. It's still in a recession right now. And in the midst of that recession, people are going hungry, people are angry, people are frustrated. Some people are pushed to engage in corruption to try to support themselves. Others are offended by the corruption. And once in a while, you see somebody like the new head of Saudi Arabia laying down what he thinks is the law and said, this corruption's coming to an end. There are strange, the world is beginning to vibrate like one of those glasses in the Memorex commercial. Is it live or Memorex? And then pop. The glass shatters when it hears gets that note, high C or whatever it is. We're seeing that. We're seeing a little evidence of that. You know, it's the sort of thing that you might have seen back prior to World War I. Somebody shot a prince from Sarajevo, if I recall correctly. But fairly obscure politicians get shot, and next thing you know, the world just kind of collapses into a World War One. It's strange, and you wonder, are we at another moment where we have a kind of instability that predisposes us to do stupid and violent things that may be completely contrary to our own best interest? But are we angry enough to, will we cut off our nose to spite our face? Maybe that's the question. I don't know. We'll watch and see, but it's going to unfold. I think we're going to see, we'll see answers to these questions within
very
the
soon.
Next, yeah. And this isn't going to be 5 years from now. We're going to see answers. Not necessarily. I don't mean that the end of the line is going to happen in the next couple of months or whatever. I'm not saying we'll see a complete collapse, but we may be able to see some clarity in the next couple of months where we begin to see, oh, this place really is getting strange.
Well, I think what we really are experiencing is we have the world that is so flush with debt. I mean, how much bigger, how much growth, and with debt, all you have to continue capitalism. You always have to go after more and more. Well, you know what? Maybe there is no more. Maybe we are at that point. There is no more. And what we're seeing is, you know, you have countries that were never had the opportunity, you know, like the Saudis, and, you know, I mean, nobody ever paid much attention to them and so forth, and, you know, their corruption. But we're kind of like at a point. We're at a peak. Forget just peak oil. We're at
peak corruption.
Peak,
maybe we finally reached the end. Can't be any
more such
corrupt
a thing
than
as
we already are.
Peak capitalism pushed by debt. I mean, you know, I mean, how many more people do we need? And yet we're constantly told we're overpopulated. People have to keep buying things.
We're not.
People have to keep buying things in order to keep everything going. Yeah, it means they have to create more debt because nobody has any money anyway. I think we're pretty much at the end of the stream. I think we're pretty much at the end of the road where what's next? I just don't see us going on like we've had since 2008.
No, it's not likely.
It's not likely.
We've
it's
heard
not
people say it repeatedly. People in positions of power, Janet Yellen, for example, we are in uncharted waters. We've had Janet Yellen say just in the last couple of weeks, she and one of the other principals and the Federal Reserve say, we don't understand what's going on with inflation. How can it be possible that someone who is allegedly managing, manipulating, controlling the U.S. economy just comes up and says, I don't know nothing about inflation, Miss Scarlett. I mean, it's like Butterfly McQueen running the Federal Reserve. How can it be? How can you even make that admission? That's like riding with in a cab with some driver who says he has no idea where the turn signal is. What? Where did you get your license? Do you even have a license? I don't know. Is it safe to be in this cab? Maybe not. The world is getting, it's vibrating. You know, this is Live or Memorex. We'll see. We're going to take another break for a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
To school, I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom. This is Financial Survival. I've got an article from Zero Hedge, and the headline is Deutsche Bank asks a stunning question. Is this the beginning of the end of fiat money? Huh? Now, this is interesting to me. This is because Deutsche Bank, significant player on the world stage. And here they are asking the same. They're saying, gee, you don't think anything could happen to our fiat money? And we've been telling you for 5 years on this program, this thing is going to go south. The fiat system cannot sustain itself. I don't believe you can continue this. Even if the dollar goes, some people might think we'll get rid of the dollar and we'll put up a new fiat system. I don't think you'll be able to. I think people right now, most people don't understand what's meant by fiat currency. They don't understand between the difference between fiat currency and money, all right? But when fiat currency finally implodes, and it seems to me that it has to, people are going to learn the difference between money and fiat currency, and I think it's going to be more difficult for government, the powers that be, to impose a new and improved fiat currency on the world. I don't think they're going to buy it. No, we'll watch. We'll see. Maybe they're going to try. Maybe they can succeed. Maybe they can back the currency with special drawing rights. But that's nothing but more fiat currency. There's nothing real behind it besides another new and improved illusion. We used to back the system with petrodollars. Now we're going to back the system with special drawing rights. Maybe. But if we do, it's still another illusion. And I don't know how long they can keep giving us illusions before somebody says, I do want the sizzle. Give me the steak, all right? Give me something real. So here's the article from Zero Hedge. It says, 1 month ago, Deutsche Bank's unorthodox credit analyst Jim Reed published a phenomenal report, one which just a few years ago would have been anathema in the hushed quarters of high finance as it dealt with two formerly taboo topics. One, is a financial crisis coming? The answer is yes. And two, what are the catalysts that have led the world to its current pre-catastrophic state? To which Reed had three answers, right? What are the catalysts? What's bringing on the trouble? One, central banks. Two, financial bubbles. And three, record amounts of debt. Just as striking was Reed's nuanced observation that it was the fiat monetary system itself that has encouraged and perpetrated the current boom-bust cycle, which was itself in jeopardy of becoming extinct when the next mega crash hits. They're saying Deutsche Bank has produced a white paper that says we think the fiat monetary system, is in danger of going extinct when the next mega crash hits. We think the final, the article, or the report from Reed, he says, we think the final break with precious metals currency systems from the early 1970s, after centuries of adhering to such regimes, and he says, and to a fiat currency world, has encouraged budget deficits, rising debts, huge credit creation, ultra-loose monetary policy, global buildup of imbalances, financial deregulation, and more unstable markets. The various breaks in the with gold-based currencies over the last century or so has correlated well with our financial shocks slash crisis indicator. It shows that you are more likely to see crises, shocks, when we break from the hard currency systems. Implication is, if you want to get away from those crises and shocks, you need to go back to a gold or silver-based monetary system. And this is coming not from us. All right, we've been talking about this for 5 years, but here's Deutsche Bank, and they say, yeah, this might be right. It is pretty amazing to see that these people are saying, hey, wait a second. You know, to my mind, they're just dealing with reality. It's not as if they're seeing the same thing. You can't avoid this. You know, it's the sort of thing where Melody and I can sit here and point at certain observations, one thing or another. People can agree with us, they can disagree with us. But insofar as we are correct, and in the sense that we're pointing out this is real, we're going to see the truth here before this is all over. Here comes Deutsche Bank, and they say, hey, maybe we're seeing the truth, and maybe the fiat system itself is potentially the weakest link in any future crisis, and therefore likely to disappear. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, we are correct, and it's what makes us correct is all fiat currencies have failed.
Well, yeah.
History has proven
a couple hundred times
fiat currencies bring inflation.
Yep.
It really is simple, a one and a two. When you have a fiat currency, this is what happens, and we're not that far away from it. It's been going on for how long? The government, it's just only been able to orchestrate it to the length of time that it has, mainly due to computers, mainly due to globalization, mainly due to, so there's a lot of reasons they've been able to, and that's what, you know, when we talk about bubbles and we talk about recessions coming out of the recessions that we have, it's all been generated by debt. The government that we have today, the size of government that we have today is all because of a fiat currency.
Yep.
So, you know, the system itself destroys itself.
Yeah.
And I think we're at that point in time right now. Sure, there's bumps there. And really, it's just like the shooting on Sunday. Most people can't even begin to think of how that happens, of how a person can do that. And it's kind of the same thing. You know, we can't believe how long they've been able to keep this structure of currency, of this structure of finances going to the degree that they have. And we just can't, you know, but they create these, but you got globalism, you got bankers. It's the bankers that really have kept this going. The central bankers, just, you know, the Greenspans, they're just the mouthpiece. You know, they're the mouthpiece of the banks, the Goldman Sachs, the Citibank, J.P. Morgan, you know, the typical global banks. They're the ones that, you know, continue to get wealthy. And that's also been proven since, you know, the time of day, you know. So, you know, it's fact. It's truth. It's history.
And
all
it's not
fiat
even just
currencies
fact. It's like
fail.
A mathematical reality. All right, it's like jumping off the top of a 100-story building and claiming you are flying. Look at me, I'm flying. Well, the difference between flying and falling is, can you walk away from the landing? All right, if you crash into the pavement from 100 stories up and you can walk away, then I guess you were flying. On the other hand, if you crash into the pavement and it is a painful experience, you were not flying, you were falling. And we are simply, we've been saying, look, you're falling. It feels like you're flying, but you're falling. And you need to perceive that, because there's a moment coming when you're going to impact on the pavement. You know, got to be careful jumping off these buildings. And that's what we did. We jumped off a 100-story building when we invoked a pure fiat currency back in 1971, when we severed the last of the dollar's ties to gold. We said, all right, from here on out, dollars no longer connected to gold. All right, that was pure fiat currency. We jumped off the 100-story building. It was an invigorating flight. We've been at it for, what, 29, 39, 46, 47
years?
We've been at this?
Since they created
this is a pure fiat.
That was the agenda. Once they began to take gold out of the people's hand, it was over. Because that's when the true programs began.
But still,
once they took it out of the system, they were able to create the social securities. They were able to create all the social programs that brought us out. And, you know, and it was just a continuation. And that was the final in 74. That was the final, or 71. That was the final nail in the coffin. But I mean, so they've been planning this for a very long time. And who benefits? Bankers.
I don't doubt that bankers are right in it up to their ears, central bankers. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a man who's working the First National Bank down the street. We're talking about central banks around the world are apparently in this. But I don't even know if they're the top of the food chain.
Citibank, Goldman Sachs. I mean, they're the ones who control the central banks. They're the ones that are all sitting on the boards of the corporations of the Federal Reserve. You know, so who does control who?
I don't know.
You know? So...
I don't know, but they're taking advantage of this fiat monetary system. There are people who understand it at the top, and they're able to exploit it. And the vast majority of people don't see the difference between a modern $100 bill and gold or silver. They don't understand. What difference does it make? It spends. All right? They do not understand the legal and political implications of using these fiat debt-based monetary systems. They're going to learn it. When it all blows up in their face, they find out that it doesn't work anymore. Their little green pieces of paper are reduced to something equivalent to Confederate dollars, and people are going to sit back and say, what the heck is going on here? And they're going to learn. Let's see if you can find people who will sell them another fiat currency.
There was an article out of about how China's richest sovereign wealth fund is teaming up with Goldman Sachs to invest at least $5 billion, mostly in U.S. manufacturing. Now, Goldman Sachs really hasn't made any type of an announcement or anything like that. So, you know, we're just going by the release of this article, and they're looking to partner with it on private equity fund and deploy money into manufacturing, industrial, consumer, healthcare, and other U.S. businesses. Well, I can remember on programs, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, talking about, well, you're going to have China that's going to sign the paychecks of the American people. And that's what happens when a country gets to the point where we're at. We can't. I mean, it's almost a natural. It's just, you know, they're going to be coming in, investing, you know, billions and billions of dollars, buying up our country, creating jobs. A lot of people will be thankful for a job. Maybe it'll pay better than some. Maybe it won't. And I get that, yes, there's going to be a lot of robots doing it too, but you know, $5 billion is $5 billion. If it creates some jobs and so forth, most people will be happy. But those are the choices we have because we can't carry on our own anymore.
Why do you think they're talking about investing in U.S. manufacturing?
You tell me your answer.
I think it's evidence that they believe that global free trade is a dying prospect. I won't say dying. Dying is an exaggerated term, probably. But the reason, why would you build a plant here instead of building it in China or India or who knows where? There's 100 third world places you could build your manufacturing plant and take advantage of cheaper labor. But instead, they're going to build it in the end. They're talking about building new manufacturing facilities in the United States. It implies that they realize tariffs are going up and bringing products that you're not going to be able to sell foreign built. Products in this country at the same profitable level that they have in the past.
I look at it as a way to infiltrate our country.
No.
You know, I don't think I get what you're saying, but I think there's a lot bigger picture here coming from China. I mean, $5 billion for China is really not much.
No, I agree.
You know, but it's a way to infiltrate our country. And it's a way to get established, to get hold. And because we know they're a communist country, what do communists do? We already know his goal for 30 years. You know, he's already been written into the Constitution. He's going to be the most powerful Chinese leader. That might sound crazy to a lot of people. But I think you kind of have to understand, you know, again, they're, you know, they, They do what they have to do to protect their countries.
Well, the one thing about it is they don't act on a quarterly basis.
No, absolutely not.
They take a long term, and they are prepared to work for goals. We're going to set a goal, and 15, 20 years from now, we expect this result. That doesn't happen in this country. We are basically caught in what's happening on the quarterly report, and we'll go up, down, sideways, and respond to it.
The people live on a quarterly basis, but the elite, I think they have longer plans, you know, as we believe that, you know, that their longer plans have been to, you know, to destroy this country. We've seen their agenda. We've seen the, you know, how they have orchestrated and conditioned the people at many various points and times. And we've seen them lower our standard of living to and raise other countries' standard of living to equalize. And, you know, that they're very patient. You know, they're very patient. They've been working on it for 100 years. So,
I agree.
The elite, the big, you know, China, yeah, you're right. They're patient. They have plans. But the people here in this country, again, we're quarterly.
And how can they make plans that last that long? And the answer is they respond to fundamentals. All right? They are prepared to sit back and say, we're going to buy tons and tons and tons of gold because we know the price is going up. We're not saying it's going to go up next month or next year, but we know that the price of gold is going up, and they've been able to look at that. They've been able to look at fundamentals and say, we're buying more gold. They can look at fundamentals and say, we'll invest in manufacturing facilities here, there, or wherever. They take a long-term view, and they can afford to do it because they look at fundamentals. We have to do the same thing if we want to protect ourselves. We're going to take a break and be back tomorrow. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day, and pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.